The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Asia for this Thursday, June 1st in Hong Kong, Wednesday, May 31st in New York. And coming up today, some Fed officials are signaling a potential pause in interest rate hikes at the next meeting. NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang plans to meet with tech executives in China despite rising U.S.-China tensions. And Dalian Wanda is said to be in talks with potential buyers for its Chinese payments unit.
Both sides of the debt ceiling legislation say they have enough votes for it to pass tonight. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says lines of communication need to be opened with China to talk about flybys. I'm Ed Baxter with Global News.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak Asia, the business news you need to start your day in just one 15-minute podcast. Available on Apple, Spotify, the Bloomberg Business app, and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning. I'm Rashad Salamat.
And I'm Brian Curtis. Here are the stories we're following today.
Let's have a look at what's going on in the Federal Reserve. Of course, attention really certainly on their next meeting coming up, with some officials signaling that a potential pause in interest rate hikes could occur as early as June. Fed Governor Philip Jefferson saying he's inclined to keep interest rates steady at the Fed's next meeting.
A decision to hold our policy rate constant at a coming meeting should not be interpreted to mean that we have reached the peak rate for this cycle. Indeed, skipping a rate hike at a coming meeting would allow the committee to see more data before making decisions about the extent of additional policy firming.
Jefferson's comments were echoed, really, by others out there as well, including Philadelphia Fed President Patrick Harker. He said that the Fed would, we should probably skip a rate hike at its upcoming policy meeting. Now, policymakers are carefully assessing how their tightening campaign is impacting the American economy. And the Fed said in its latest Beige Book survey today that the U.S. economy showed signs of cooling in recent weeks as hiring and inflation eased slightly. Fed officials are meeting next on monetary policy on the 13th and 14th of June.
And I mentioned that NVIDIA stock dropped. The leader of NVIDIA, Jensen Huang, heading to China to meet with other tech executives there. It comes despite rising tensions between Washington and Beijing. Bloomberg's Ann Cates has the story.
NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang will travel to China in June. Sources tell Bloomberg that companies on his itinerary include video game giant Tencent and TikTok owner ByteDance. NVIDIA is emerging as a critical player in artificial intelligence, but Biden administration sanctions prevent the semiconductor maker from selling its most advanced AI chipsets to Chinese customers. Apple's Tim Cook and billionaire Elon Musk are also courting China. In Washington, Ann Cates, Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.
All right, well, let's have a look now at Dalian Wanda, the Chinese conglomerate. It's said to be in talks with ByteDance and others for a potential sale of its payments division. Bloomberg's Joanne Wong has more from Hong Kong.
Wanda is looking to sell its digital payments license for about 1 billion yuan, or $141 million. The payment license could provide data and access to a large number of users, but some prospective buyers said the price could be lower. ByteDance Douyin Group said at a preliminary talks about the deal. Wanda has been trying to raise cash and shore up its liquidity. That's because it may have to repay investors about 30 billion yuan if it fails to list its mall operations this year. In Hong Kong, I'm Joanne Wong, Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.
Well, Toyota is looking to make a big splash with its first all-electric vehicle made in the United States. Bloomberg's Bonnie Au has that story from Hong Kong.
Toyota has announced plans to build a three-row sports utility vehicle. The electric SUV will use batteries from a new factory in North Carolina. Toyota is also investing an additional $2.1 billion into the battery factory. That will bring the company's total investment in the battery factory to $5.9 billion. The all-electric SUV will compete against similar vehicles from other leading companies. They include Tesla's Model X and Y and Rivian's R1S. Production of the new Toyota EV will start in 2025 in Kentucky. In Hong Kong, I'm Bonnie Albert, Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.
Right, let's get the application specialist Salesforce providing a disappointing outlook for future sales. The story coming from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
It raises concerns that its newfound focus on profit may hinder revenue growth. The software company projected 10% growth in contracted sales for the current quarter ending in July, falling short of analysts' average estimate of more than 11%. Salesforce also affirmed its fiscal year forecast that revenue will increase 10% to about $34.6 billion. Salesforce has had a tumultuous 6 months that included job cuts, executive departures, board director changes, and public pressure from multiple activist investors. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.
All right, coming up on the program a little bit later this morning, I wanted to mention Salesforce is trading down pretty sharply in after hours, down about 6.6% here. Took a while for that to happen, sort of fluctuated between positive and negative gains right after that report. We'll take a closer look at markets with our guest this morning, a variety on tap for you, not least among them, William Curtain, portfolio manager at Milford Asset Management. Carol Pepper, always enjoy talking to her, and David Chow from Invesco. That's coming up in the first couple of hours of the show. It was a little bit of a tough day on Wall Street, and now with Salesforce trading down in after hours, coupled with what we saw from NVIDIA, maybe putting a little bit more pressure on one of the parts of the market that has really juiced up the animal spirits this year, tech. So that's something that we'll get to coming up. Now it's time for Global News. And there's this one, U.S. House leaders on both sides expressing some optimism that the debt ceiling bill will pass, and it will happen tonight. Ed Baxter has global news from the 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
Yeah, Brian, you're right. It's more than some optimism. It is just flat out optimism. The House has passed the procedural bill to allow debate, which is the next step. It's going on now. And Bloomberg's Zach Cohen says Democrats stepped in to help Kevin McCarthy, which is a very interesting signal.
These are usually procedural votes that are very party line, especially if the legislation is partisan. And so the fact that some Democrats have to come in and basically give the votes to McCarthy to get the groundwork through in order to get the debt limit deal done, I think is a pretty good indication that they're willing to bail him out when it comes to really important things.
And McCarthy himself, well, he's working the phones and he's been working the hallways today of Congress trying to make sure that it has the votes to pass. His message?
If I'm a member of Congress, I wouldn't want history to pass me by when I could do the biggest cut, when I could do work reforms for welfare.
And his House Majority Whip, Tom Emmer, a Republican from Minnesota, says he's sure the votes are in hand. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says he has the committed votes to pass the legislation if Republicans follow suit.
We continue to maintain that House Republicans need to keep their commitment to produce 150 votes.
So after the seesaw, several of weeks, maybe months, the vote itself, although a moving target, is expected about 8:30 p.m. Wall Street time. China's actions in the air regarding close flybys against not only U.S. but other countries is growing. This according to U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. He says the latest one.
Our planes were flying in international airspace on a routine mission. Chinese pilot took dangerous action in approaching the plane very, very closely.
He says it very much points to the fact that lines of communication between the two nations is very much lacking now.
Chinese pilot took dangerous action in approaching the plane very, very closely. There have been a series of these actions directed not just at us, but at other countries in recent months.
Now, the reports say reconnaissance plane had to fly through the wake of a Chinese fighter jet, which can be a very dangerous situation. EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen is calling for a just peace in Ukraine and rejecting a ceasefire.
A ceasefire would be inherently unstable and destabilize the region along the contact line. Nobody would invest or rebuild. And the conflict could flare up again at any time.
She says a just peace must result in the withdrawal of Russian forces and equipment from Ukraine. Former Vice President U.S. Mike Pence will officially kick off his presidential run June 7th. He's been laying the groundwork now for over a year. And Bill Ackman, founder and CEO of Pershing Square Capital, says J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon should run for president in this election cycle. He says Diamond is a centrist who is pro-business and pro-free enterprise, while also supportive of well-designed social programs. He says Diamond could beat either Joe Biden or Donald Trump. Now, Diamond actually opened himself up for this endorsement on Bloomberg Television, saying,
"I love my country, and maybe one day I'll serve my country in one capacity or another, but I love what I do. I think J.P. Morgan do a great job for helping Americans, for helping countries around the world."
Yeah, so he he hinted. He did say he loves J.P. Morgan's team and is happy where he is right now. Global News, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in over 120 countries in San Francisco. I'm Ed Baxter, and this is Bloomberg.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Asia, Brian Curtis and Rashad Salamat. And our guest is William Curtain, Portfolio Manager at Milford Asset Management. So, William, we had a little bit of a crack in tech today. I mean, markets go up and down, so not such a big deal. But it's one of those things where you wonder whether or not investors would need to see some kind of broadening of the gains in the market to suggest that a bull run has started. There's a lot of negativity that have been supporting the bear position. And chief among them is this is a pretty narrow market. Do you see that as a possibility that tech could slip a little bit, but the market could broaden out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of the stocks left behind in the recent rally and markets are actually becoming increasingly better value. We actually have been trimming some of our mega cap holdings and adding to the various more mid cap holdings that represent better value. So certainly, yeah, the negative breadth is always a harbinger of used as a technical harbinger of an imminent downturn, and that's certainly possible. But we think it's probably just as big a possibility. You do see a cool off in some of the larger cap tech stocks who have driven this rally, and actually a rotation to some extent back into the smaller mid-cap companies. Markets can kind of go a little bit lower or go sideways, but just the rotation within markets being the more important thing.
NVIDIA, I mean, this is really the one which just sent all these AI-related stocks soaring, some of the other chip stocks as well here. William, the thing is that, you know, it was perhaps a lot of froth developed, so we saw 4-5% fall thereabouts. People took their money off the table, their gains. But, you know, AI, and I'm sure they'll be saying this, AI has a great, great future. In 2 years' time, we'll be saying, AI, it's got a great, great future.
No, exactly. I mean, it's in our view that the AI stocks, and well, most part of them are in a bubble, but that's not, it's not a really, you don't have to be a genius to make that comment. What really is important is the bubble going to burst tomorrow, or is it going to go a long time? Now, like all good bubbles, it's got the makings in something real. This AI is real. It's going to eventually cause significant earnings uplifts for a lot of companies. With technological change, it tends to be 7 or 8 or 10 years before companies actually make significant money on a technological revolution. You look at internet and Amazon in the late 1990s. It wasn't really until past 2010 that these businesses started to turn this internet revolution into money. Maybe the AI revolution is a bit faster in that conversion, but it will take time for the vast majority of companies to turn this revolution into money. Now, what we have is share prices that have already capitalized a lot of these future earnings well after the fact in a very, very uncertain environment. So it's just the usual way markets do. They price things in too quickly and often price them in too much. That means future earnings are already in the share price.
The valuations are pretty high on some of the defensive stocks that you like.
No, that's right, and that's why within the funds we had been positioned very long defensives earlier in the year, and as the market to an extent shifted out of cyclicals into defensives and into technology stocks, we have actually sort of lightened positions in those sectors, and instead we prefer to just hold more cash again and actually hold a bit of credit, you know, without too much interest rate duration. So we see the backdrop is actually a time of actually being patient, keeping your capital intact at the moment, and cash or in low duration bonds is not a bad way to do that, and waiting for that for those fat pitches and those other opportunities, which we're sure market movements over the next month or two will bring up more opportunities or better risk reward opportunities. It's just when those opportunities come, you want to make sure that your capital's there and it's liquid and it's available.
Very quickly here as well, William. I mean, you know, we've seen what's been happening with the data out of China. I mean, yesterday's PMI numbers really confirmed, arguably, a big slowdown in manufacturing. Got more PMI numbers today. And you're saying emerging opportunities in copper and resources. Surely the slowdown in China would put a kibosh on that.
No, that's right. It's a contrarian trade. I mean, we always held the view that the China reopening, the China trade that was in full swing in January and earlier this year was going to be overblown and was going to disappoint, and that it was largely premised on the fact that we think that there really is structural downturns in Chinese property and Chinese old world infrastructure type investment that meant that the reflation in commodities like iron ore and copper and others was significantly overblown. But it took time for that to realize. We, despite having that view, we were participating on the long side on the China trade because it was clearly going to work for a while. But we faded that trade, removed a lot of our iron ore miner positions and copper positions. Now the market's come around to the view, and the evidence and data of China is terrible, that this China trade isn't on. Valuations in certain copper miners and resource companies are coming back to quite attractive long-run levels. So we're just beginning to dip our toe in the water and starting to pick up some copper miners. Okay. And the reason I signal on copper is copper will be the first metal people look to buy when they get excited about recoveries.
Yeah. A contrarian call. William, thank you very much for joining us. William Curtain, Portfolio Manager at Milford Asset Management. This is Bloomberg Daybreak Asia, your morning brief on the stories making news from Hong Kong to Singapore and Wall Street.
Look for us on your podcast feed every day on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcast.
You can also listen live each day on Bloomberg 1130 in New York, Bloomberg 99.1 in Washington, Bloomberg 1061 in Boston, and Bloomberg 960 in San Francisco.
Our flagship New York station is available on your Amazon Alexa devices. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Plus, listen coast to coast on the Bloomberg Business app, Sirius XM Channel 119, the iHeartRadio app, and on Bloomberg.com. I'm Brian Curtis.
And I'm Rashad Salamat. Join us again tomorrow for all the news you need to start your day right here on Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.